singed hair, but chains of flowers crushed by fire, this child of God. This tragedy, why did it happen? And I think if you look more closely at this story, we will find the answer. And this is really important because for anyone who has an over-absorbing career, an over-absorbing ministry, we need to do well to look and see what we can learn from this story. Now, we are told that Jephthah was a mighty warrior. So he was like Israel's very own Bear Grylls, Rambo and Conan the Destroyer all rolled into one. He was a mighty warrior. And he had been called to go to war against Ammonites. And in Judges 11:29, we read that Jephthah was preparing for war when the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. But Jephthah also had a very difficult childhood. We also learned that he was a son of a prostitute, and though Gilead was his father, he wasn't entitled to any of the inheritance. Because when Gilead's legal wife had also given him sons, and when they had grown up, they threw him out and he fled to another country. But when the Ammonites started fighting with Israel, the leaders of Gilead called him because they now valued the fact that he was a mighty warrior. And they called him to come back so that they could have a chance of winning. Now, it's really strange, and it was interesting. Colin said before we started this sermon, you know, this is a really perplexing, difficult verse. Why would anybody say what Jephthah said? So let me read it. He decides to make a vow to the Lord, and he says in verse 30, "If you will give the Ammonites into my hand, then whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return victorious from the Ammonites shall be the Lord's, to be offered up by me by a burnt offering." Now, I find myself asking, why did he feel the need to make that kind of a vow when he already had clear evidence that God was with him? Because we read in the verse before, the Spirit of God was with him. And he had already had success in battle. So why did he need to do this? I wonder if Jephthah just didn't feel confident in God. It was like Jephthah wanted some extra insurance before he went into battle. And though making a vow sounds really spiritual, this was a faithless vow. He doubted God. You see, Jephthah wasn't in the same position as the other judges, because when we read about them, they had this spiritual experience. Gideon had the angel of the Lord turn up one day when he was threshing corn. And we know that Samson received a call even before he was born. We read that Deborah was a prophet of the Lord. Yet in Jephthah's case, God is silent. His call was instead from the elders. And in fact, the elders didn't really want him to be their chief either. But he manages to twist their arm in return for subduing the Ammonites. And because they were desperate, they capitulated. He had them over a barrel, and still God is silent. He never speaks to Jephthah, not even when the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him, as I've said. But what did Jephthah mean by whatever comes out of the doors of his house to meet him will be sacrificed? The interesting thing about the Hebrew language, it doesn't have a neuter gender like English. It doesn't have the it. It's like French. Everything is male or female. So in this case, it was whoever. The word could also mean whoever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me will be sacrificed. Now, the NRSV translates it as whoever, but most other versions say whatever, as the translators, I believe, struggled to believe that a judge would make such a vow. But this minimizes the horror of what is going on here, because whatever his intentions, it is clear it included the possibility of human sacrifice. And it's also clear from the verse that this sacrifice was to be a burnt sacrifice, a burnt offering. But surely, the more someone loves you, the more likely they are to come out and meet you. Can I get witnessed, yes, the more likely to come out. So why would he make such a promise? But to be fair to Jephthah, has anyone tried negotiating with God? Have you tried to make an inappropriate vow? You know those folks who say, I promise to give my life to you, God, if you would only heal me. And then God heals and they forget the promise. And I do remember that I was speaking to a friend about this something that I was praying about. And she turned around and said, you know what? I noticed that you seem to like to tell God what is a good idea. And I thought, yes, this is true. I was trying to bargain with God. And that is not necessarily a sin. It's not, because many of the psalmists do that. For example, David says in one of the most beautiful psalms in the Bible, restore me to the joy of your salvation and hold me by your generous spirit. Then I will teach transgressors your ways and sinners will be converted to you. So it's possible to bargain with God, but it's only too easy to make the wrong kind of bargaining, the wrong kind of vow. For example, a pastor once said that he made a vow to God that he would work hard to grow his church. Now that sounds like a good thing, doesn't it? But he ended up eating dinner at his desk, rarely seeing his children in the evening. In the end, he realized that he had sacrificed his family. And it's so easy to do. You know, you want to see people baptized, you want to see people flourish, and it's so easy to go overboard in ministry. But this problem isn't just limited to ministry. We can also sacrifice our family, our health, our well-being, our ministry to the workplace. Now, there's a story of someone called Claire McCartan. She was once a high-flying city lawyer on around 450,000 plus mark bonuses a year. And as a lawyer, she had high status and she was greatly respected. Yet this wasn't the whole story. As a lawyer, she would leave at 7:30 in the morning, just enough time to wake up her children before heading out the door, and sometimes she wouldn't get home until after 10 p.m. at night when they had long gone to bed and they were already sleeping. She was one of around 400 other lawyers in their London office, and there was a lot of pressure to achieve and put in extra time. And the more you worked, the more chance there was of getting a bonus or promotion. So she would often take her laptop home with her and work at nights and at weekends. She knew that if you weren't around among the best performers, that your career would plateau. The lawyers were expected to take clients out for drinks in the evening and to get involved, get this, in the firm's charity events outside of hours. In some ways, she had made a vow. She had committed to be a success, at least in the world's eyes. But it meant she was missing out on a relationship with her children, with her family. At first, she thought it was worth it to provide them with a stable home. She thought that as they got older, it would get easier. But she found it was the opposite. When her daughter started high school, she needed her mother even more. So Claire, she began to suffer from anxiety and stress with the pressure she was under. The work rate was constantly increasing because the better she got at her job, the more clients she would get. And she was prescribed anti-anxiety pills and she began to feel very panicky and not sleeping properly. She felt tired and stressed and realized she was missing out on the most important thing in her life, her family. She had put her family on the altar of success. And I need to ask today, is this where you are today? Because maybe there's somebody here who's in that same difficult situation. The culture at work drives and demands more and more and more. And soon you find that you're a slave to your work rather than a positive, influencing member of your family. And even young children, young people, I have to say this to you as well. Where are you? Because it won't be long before you're also thinking about having family and career. How will you ensure that you maintain a healthy balance? I don't know. There's some people who are single. And even this message also applies to you, because it's so easy to be out of balance. We talk about work-life balance these days, don't we? It's so difficult to achieve. I remember the story, again, corporate London, a young man, fresh out of university, excited and eager to do well. He was asked to do a report by a specific deadline, so he decided to go without sleep for 2 days in a row. And very sadly, when he was in the shower, he collapsed and died to do a report that probably wouldn't have been read even properly. He sacrificed his life. He put his own life on the altar of success. I hope no one's in that situation. I hope not. But at least we can start to empathize with Jephthah, who makes this awful, rash, egocentric vow that if he wins his battle with the Ammonites, that anyone or anything, because that's the true translation, that comes out of the doors of his house, he will offer up as a burnt offering. Perhaps he reasoned that the sacrifice of a few to save the many would be worth it. Maybe he felt the ends justified the means to be a leader of the Gileadites. Jephthah then goes to war and is rewarded with a massive victory. He's so pleased because it means that he can be chief over all his people. He has succeeded where few thought he was capable. He had reached his goal. Then the unimaginable happened. He is approaching home and it is his daughter, his only child, that's coming to meet him. She's dancing to the sound of music, celebrating her father's return. But he tears his clothes in grief. The person or thing to be sacrificed is his daughter. So what about you? This situation doesn't apply to everyone, but does it apply to you and your children? Are they thriving in school? Are they thriving in church? Do they want to be in church, or are they only here in body alone? Do they sit next to you, or are they elsewhere? Maybe it doesn't happen in this church, but I've seen it in other churches. I've seen it where children are outside having conversation. They're here, but they're not really here. Is it possible that for you, your family is also on the altar? So, the unimaginable happens to Jephthah. It is his daughter that is to be sacrificed. Yet for me, it is his response that is the most shocking part of this story. Because in verse 35, he says, "Alas, my daughter, you have brought me very low. You have become the cause of great trouble to me. For I have opened my mouth to the Lord and I cannot take back my vow." In other words, he blames her. He blames her. And well, he made the vow. No one else knew about it. No one asked him to. Yet now he's blaming his daughter, shifting his responsibility. It is said that blame is a way of discharging pain and discomfort. And this is true. I believe that is true, that Jephthah was feeling grief and distress. He faced losing his posterity. He faced losing his legacy. There was no one to carry on his name. But what about his daughter? She was the one facing death. But Jephthah shows no compassion. He grieves just for himself. I mean, look at the other stories in the Bible. Look at how Abraham comforted Isaac when it's time to sacrifice him, when God tells him to take him up on a mountain. And then look at Jacob. He weeps and mourns and is inconsolable when he believes that Joseph is dead. And then there's a story of David, who wishes he had died in Absalom's place when this son who tries to murder him dies. But Jephthah doesn't even say, "I'm sorry." This makes Jephthah's reaction feel even more shocking and hurtful. But sometimes parents can also unwittingly blame their children when they leave the church, for example, not recognizing how they have played a role in their children's absence. Do you know that the SEC has a ministry to help to reach out to pastors' children who have left the church? Often these children grow up to reject God because their parents sacrificed everything, even them, to their ministry. Then even more remarkable in this story is how his daughter responds by accepting her fate. She doesn't cry, she doesn't remonstrate, she doesn't argue for her life. She says to him, "Father, if you have opened your mouth to the Lord, do to me according to what has come out of your mouth, now that the Lord has given you vengeance against your enemies." And I wonder how many times have people felt like her, feeling that they have to acquiesce and accept suffering, feeling that they can't refuse God's will. Yet, this was not God's will at all. God is against human sacrifice. God gave Jephthah a major victory, not because of the vow, but in spite of the vow. So, instead of arguing for her rights, Jephthah's daughter asked for just 2 months to go up into the mountains to mourn for her virginity, for all her potential that would now be lost, for her children that she would never see, for the husband she would never know. Tragic. Then she does exactly what she says she will do, and she returns after 2 months. This serves to highlight that Jephthah also does exactly what he says he will do. He will do to her, the Bible says, according to his vow. He will sacrifice her. In verse 39 it says, "Her father, who did with her according to the vow he had made." But why did he let her die? I believe there are at least 3 reasons. Firstly, he didn't have that relationship with God. He had 2 months to cry and plead with God. He could have fasted and prayed like David, who prayed for his son from Bathsheba, would not die because of his sin. But Jephthah is silent. Why? I believe that Jephthah didn't know God, not know God in a personal way, not in a relational way. He did not pray to him except when he needed something. I believe Jephthah saw God like a pagan God. And he felt that, or didn't realize, that he needed only to pray to God. And this God of love would have not wanted such a vow and would have wanted Jephthah to turn aside for it. But how many people see God as having the same character as their earthly fathers, with all the flaws and weaknesses? And let me ask this now. How do you see God? I mean, not how you see him intellectually, but how do you feel about God, especially in a crisis? Do you feel he's not there for you, just as your father was not there for you? Or do you feel that God has his favorites, but not you, just as your father had a favorite that was your sibling and not you? Secondly, Jephthah suffered from rejection. Not only did Jephthah not have a relationship with God, Jephthah was socially rejected. Jephthah was the son of a prostitute. The fact that the narrator mentioned this even before we know who his father is tells us that this identity dominated his life. That as a child, he was ostracized, maybe bullied, maybe abused. Then later, he was completely rejected and forced to leave his community. I mean, what does that kind of experience do to you? Unfortunately, social rejection has serious repercussions for someone's psychological state, as well as society in general. A study on school shooters found that almost all had suffered from social rejection. And you know what I mean by school shooters? Those young people, yes. I believe Jephthah's rejection impacted Jephthah's thinking, so that being oppressed, he became an oppressor. Being accepted, becoming the leader of the people who had rejected him, meant that he was willing to sacrifice all. This, I believe, was Jephthah's driving motivation. So let me ask you, has rejection impacted you? Could it come back to haunt you like it did Jephthah? Someone in your congregation is just downright rude to you. What would you do? Would it just wash off like water off a duck's back? Or would you blow up like Mount Vesuvius? Would that insult be like a dagger to your heart because it touches the very place of your most vulnerable wound? Lastly, the third reason that Jephthah sacrificed his daughter was that Jephthah was proud and egotistical. So not only did he not know God and was struggling with rejection, he was also too proud. That vow was all about his own needs, his need to win, his need to be a leader. Perhaps it was because he struggled with self-worth, but Jephthah did not want to lose face. He could not deal with the embarrassment and pain of knowing that he was wrong, so it was easier to blame his daughter instead. So in closing, Bob Pierce of World Vision achieved so much, but sacrificed his family in the process. Jephthah also sacrificed his pride for his pride and political ambition. So what can we learn from these horrific stories of needless sacrifice? Firstly, Jephthah did not know God. So we need to stay connected to Christ. We need to know Christ as our personal Lord and Savior. We need to be in relationship because only with God can we flourish in work and in our ministry. Don't fall into the trap of doing God's work without the God of the work. Secondly, rejection is a painful reality for many people, and it can poison your ministry, your career, and your life. So seek support in resolving it if needs be. There is no shame in having counseling. There is nothing spiritual in rejecting emotional healing. Thirdly, seek to be humble. It's okay if you've made mistakes. In fact, people will respect you all the more when you can admit to it. Fourth, evaluate the sacrifice you're making. Is it called for or uncalled for? Who is it really for? So finally, what kind of success do you want to aspire to? What kind of legacy do you want to leave? Whatever you do, do not sacrifice your family, your health, your ministry, your relationship with God on the altar of success. And that's why I admire Claire. Claire, who gave up a high-powered career as a lawyer and sacrificed her ambitions rather than her family. Because now Claire is a care worker on minimal wages, taking around £160 a week instead of the £450,000 plus salary a year she was earning before. Now her work consists of caring for incontinent prone elderly patients suffering with dementia. And yet Claire says she would never regret it. She hasn't regretted it, not for a moment, and has never looked back. When she eventually decided to hand in her notice, the feeling of relief was just overwhelming. A few days later, she saw a poster up outside a care home. She'd been looking for a part-time job, but had found it hard to find one that would fit in with the school hours. She was squeamish at first. I think I would be squeamish, I have to admit. But when she realized what the job would entail. But then she ended up loving it. She states, I realized that those vulnerable people really needed me. It was a life or death job because without a good care worker, their lives would be also very different. And it was so rewarding. I would come and see people arriving distressed and not knowing where they were. And by the way I treated them and interacted with them, I could make them comfortable and make a real difference in their lives. And I would arrive home at the end of the day feeling that I'd done something valuable and worthwhile. And despite the huge drop in pay, she says, I didn't mind it so much because I was no longer paid £800 out a month for a childminder, plus the cost of commuting and spending the day in London. Crucially, her change of profession had a huge impact at home. She comments, meanwhile, our family have a much better relationship as I've been able to spend more time with my children and accompany them through their development through school. She's able to enjoy her family. And I wonder whether this applies to some of us. Many of us feel caught up in the rat race, trying to juggle family life and career. And deep down, we know it's not working. Our children don't seem to know God. And it seems impossible to fit in family worship and housework and all the 101 different things we need to fit in to succeed. We are juggling plates. And as soon as we concentrate on one area, plates start crashing down in other areas. Perhaps like Claire, we don't even get home in time to do family worship. We don't even have time to encourage our children to have a love for Bible and prayer. And on Sabbath, we're just too exhausted to focus on our family. Sabbath is me time. And the children? So, let me ask, if you're in this situation, I have to ask, is it worth it? What are you going to say to God when he asks what you have done with the children he has entrusted to you? Or maybe it's that you feel you don't have time for ministry. And again, what are you going to say to God when he says to you, why didn't you have time to minister to those around you? Why didn't you have time to help those in need? So let me ask, what are you going to do about it? What can you do about it? Sometimes it feels as if there's no answer. But I think if you take it to prayer, I believe if you take it to prayer, to God, and sincerely ask him, he will show you a way. For some, you already know that your children are drifting out of church. For some, you're so busy you don't even know what is blatantly before your eyes. And am I saying, as a woman, you can't have a career? No, not at all. And it's interesting that Claire is now retraining to be a counsellor, supporting those coming to term with dementia. That's not the point I'm making. God has blessed us with skills so that we can impact the world in so many different ways. But let's not sacrifice the better for the good, or for the best for the good. So let me ask again, church, what kind of success do you want to aspire to? What kind of legacy do you want to leave behind? How do you want to be remembered? Whatever it is, whatever you choose to do, do not sacrifice your family on the altar of success. Amen.